Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with a Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and I'm excited about this episode because it is really the beginning of a podcast series that we will be doing together every other week to talk about college prospects. And my guest is Russ Landy. And Russ Landy is someone who, while we're the same age, I came up reading Russ's work when he worked with Sporting News, with NFL.com, with GM Jr. There are a number of guys that I respect in this industry who have done work with Russ at GM Jr. and have come up through, you know, a lot of his influence. And he certainly has influenced my work greatly. And so I'm just super excited to have you on, Russ. It's going to be a lot of fun for us to talk about NFL prospects and just the scouting process as a whole. So, you know, welcome and thanks for coming on.
Oh, I couldn't be more excited, Matt. You know, as I think about it, there are so many people I've worked with, both with teams and in the media, and there are really very few that I really respect in terms of not just their knowledge, but really their commitment to it. And seeing your work over the years, not just how it's progressed, but more importantly, the passion you show in it, the fact that you're willing to say, hey, unlike most scouts and anybody in the media, you're literally showing your notes, saying, here's what I wrote down. And so you're not hiding anything. There's no way for you to make up anything. I have unbelievable respect for that. And that's one of the reasons I think I've so much respected you throughout getting to know you and so excited to do this with you.
Oh, man, I definitely appreciate that. Very flattering. And this is going to be a lot of fun for us to do. And I think, you know, you brought it up best just now is talking about note taking. And, you know, you suggested maybe we do a show to talk about our process a little bit more and why that, you know, why we value what we're doing. And so, you know, I'd love for you to just lead it off in terms of what is it about note taking for you and how you look at scouting, how you evaluate players. You know, what are some important things for young people out there who want to get into this, who want to learn a little bit more about, you know, the evaluation process? What are some things that you can share with people about the value of good note taking?
Well, I think a few of the big important things are A, being organized, and prep work. Because when I first got started and I was doing my draft guide and then got in with the Rams, no one really ever sat me down and said, hey, here's how I do it. A lot of the people I learned from were 60s, 70s, and they sort of had an old school, they would just take notes literally on one piece of paper and write rambling notes about all the players and then decipher it later or hand it to a secretary. So I didn't really learn a ton from them. So it was sort of piecemeal. I had to figure it out. And I realized that if you don't do your prep work and know exactly what players you're looking at, whose jersey numbers or which guys have what jersey numbers, what positions they're playing, and be able to lock that down and put organized setup on your page for where to look for each guy and stuff, it really is difficult to be a thorough, good evaluator. And I was amazed when I got hired by the Browns, and they really, some of the veteran scouts took me under their wing and said, hey, here's what I do. And they each showed me their method. And they said, we're not saying use our method, but here are some key things you need to do, which is know every senior and potentially good underclassmen before you go to a school, have them on a list, have their jersey numbers, have their injury history, have everything there so you don't have to go searching stuff out once you start taking notes. It's all right in front of you. And the one thing that I've sort of added over the years that I find really valuable is every game I change the color of the pen I take notes in, because that way if we were ever doing this podcast and I said, hey, you know, I looked at Thayer Mumford, junior offensive lineman at Ohio State, and I thought he was terrible, you could say why. And I could say, well, you know, specifically in the game against Indiana, my notes said he was trash. And that would be a way for us to reference it. And especially when you're in draft meetings and you have to defend yourself, and you have to go against someone else who may love a player, you have to be able to point to specific things as an example so that either A, you can have a better discussion, or B, you can pull the film out. So the note-taking process, to me, the organizational side of it, if you're not organized to start with, I think there's very little chance of success overall in terms of getting the notes down that are necessary to write a thorough and detailed report.
Yeah, I think that's a great explanation because really things happen fast. I mean, certainly I don't have the experience of you do, where you go to You know, you go to a facility or you go to a team and you're interviewing players or you're interviewing recruiting coordinators or coaches and asking them about those players and following up. But you, it's just in very similar ways. It's very much like reporting where if you don't have your questions thought out at first and you haven't done your prep work, then you're not going to have the questions you need available to really get the answers you want. Because if someone thinks that you really haven't done your homework, they're just going to give you a glossy answer. But if you've really dug in and you ask them a question that shows that you've really studied them and you're really prepared, they're more likely to give you the meat that you're looking for. They may even give you things that you didn't expect to hear that are going to be really positive. And then just in addition to that organization process, I think it's important. One of the things I value is just defining everything that you're going to look at and understanding. For me, that's been valuable for me because it allows me to keep up with a lot of different details and to make sure that I'm looking at for all of those details. I may not get them all in one game. And I may need several games to see all of these things. And I may not even see everything in, you know, 8, 9, 10 games studied. But at least I know what I'm looking for. And if I don't see it, that's important, too, to be able to note, I haven't seen this player do these things. It doesn't mean that he can't, but it tells me that these are things that I need to see him do. And if I were working for a team, I would think that would be valuable to be able to say, you guys are going to put him through workouts. And I don't think this guy can track the ball. I don't know if this guy can track the ball over his head very well as a receiver. I would like to see you put him through some drills to where he's going to have to track the ball over his head, you know, with his back to the quarterback to see if he can actually find the football because he hasn't been used in that way. And he's a super athlete, but we haven't seen this. And if he does it well, great. But if he doesn't, you've saved yourself, you know, you've gotten a valuable visit and workout with that player. And it's because your scouting staff's been able to at least note what they haven't seen.
And you know, two things that you make a great point of there, Matt. And one of them is something I teach when I teach my class about scouting is for people that haven't scouted before, I always tell them, hey, print out a blank scouting report, which has all the skills listed on it for each position and take your notes on that. Because until you get used to knowing all the traits that you have to look for when you're writing about a player, it helps to have something where it lists them all. Because that way, like you're saying, if you don't take any notes on something, it's going to be hard to write that player up if you don't have notes on his ability to change directions or his ability to adjust in pass protection, whatever it may be. And the other thing you mentioned where you talk about the workouts, another reason it's so valuable when you go on the school visits is if you're at a school like in Iowa – where the coaches are really open and Coach Ferentz and the whole staff there really believe in sort of the intersection of the NFL and the college team so that their players can achieve success. If I'm in there watching film and I watch 5, 6 games, I can literally pull the position coach up when I'm walking out to practice and say, you know, I've watched a ton of film and I'm looking at this running back and the way you guys use your offense, I've never seen him have to stay in and pass pro. And I say, hey, is there any way in practice today you could get him in a few spots where I can see that? And at a school like Iowa or other schools where they're really open and friendly with the scouts and they really view it as sort of a joint collaboration to help their players, they will literally change some of their practice plan occasionally, maybe just 3 or 4 snaps worth, to let you see that so you get a glimpse of that player. And then the other part of that also is, Matt, and you know this is, part of scouting is, you know, you see a lot of traits on a player, but you never see him do something. That's where you as a scout have to sort of say, you know what? I have to be courageous. I have to say, I've seen him do this. I've seen him do this. I believe because of that, he can do these things at the next level. And that's what scouting truly is about. It's projecting and determining how good they're going to be at something that you may not have seen them be able to do.
Yeah, I think that's excellent. And it is so true. And one of the things that's funny is that I get a lot of people who read the RSP and they will say things like, you know, you really quantify a lot of what's qualitative in this. And you'll look at a lot of things from even what people would consider an analytical standpoint. And, it, you know, but And they'll ask me about it from that standpoint. And I'll say, yes. And I try to define as many details as possible because it helps me really see that what I think is that invisible thread in a player's game. But ultimately, I still think that scouting is an intuitive skill. It's an intuitive craft. And while you're trying to get as many of the details as you can and look at everything from an analytical standpoint, you still have to piece everything together just in the same way these players do. I mean, we can talk about quarterbacks all day. And the first time I really learned about you, Russ, was, you know, when you had your excellent scouting report on guys like Tom Brady and Mark Bolger. And, you know, and that influenced me a lot, just looking at the detail of what you talked about with those guys. And to me, there is an intuitive element to scouting where, just like with quarterbacks, they can know theory, they can be very intellectual, they can have good technique, but if they can't piece it together in the moment in a game, it's a performance. And if they can't do that, then they're just a bunch of disparate elements on the field that works out enough on a play-to-play basis, but in pivotal situations, you can see the stark difference between a guy like a Tom Brady and maybe right now a guy like Josh Allen, in terms of where they're at as players, or a guy like Baker Mayfield with the struggles he's had right now. And, you know, certainly we can talk about, you know, developmental timelines, but that intuitive aspect of it, to me, it doesn't mean that you just sit there with your crystal ball and chant with, you know, incense and try and tap into something there. I just think it's about understanding that, you know, just in the corporate world, people talk about emotional intelligence, and it's,
yep.
And you have to learn how to apply emotional intelligence to the work that you do. And, you know, I don't know if you can teach emotional intelligence to the extent that you're going to develop it as sharply as other people. But I think if you have some of it, you certainly want to maximize how you use that in your process. And I think part of that comes down to that the things that you may not even be strong at first, like organization and note-taking, that's even more of a reason why you should go to great pains to go into details like that and get prepared earlier, because the more that happens, the more that kind of clears your mind to be able to be present in the moment to observe what you need to do. And you're not overthinking everything because it's all there in front of you and already there for you to just observe the game. Because if you're caught up in all the details, you start missing the broader range of points that are happening in front of you, and you're not being able to connect the dots from play to play, from quarter to quarter, from game to game. And I think that that's something that people can often miss because they're still struggling with, you know, what detail that they should be noting and where they should be noting and how they organize it.
And I think a lot of that also just comes from experience. The more you get into it, the more you can focus on the little things without losing the scope of the big things. But you make a great point when you're talking about certain quarterbacks that process quickly, don't process quickly. And one of the guys I'm always reminded of is when Brandon Weeding came out of college. I remember grading his film, loved his play, and was fortunate enough to know his agent when he was coming out of school. So at the Senior Bowl, I got to spend about an hour and a half interviewing him. And I went through X's, no's, schemes, the whole nine yards, and this kid was brilliant. I was like, all right, this kid's got it above the shoulders. He's obviously mature because he's older, having played professional baseball. I love this film. This kid's going to make it. And as soon as he got in the NFL, you literally could see the smoke coming out of his ears when he was in a game. It wasn't that he wasn't intelligent. He just, that instinctive reaction time wasn't there. And that, again, is one of those intuitive things. You can't chart. You can't figure it out until they're thrown to the wolves. And that, to me, when you were talking about sort of that emotional intelligence, that's what sort of jumps out to me, is the reactionary. How do you judge those things that are unquantifiable, I guess is the best way to say it. And he's a great example of that to me, because quarterback evaluation is the hardest thing I've ever done. And every quarterback, there are mysteries about, and it makes it so difficult to be consistently right.
Yeah. And because I come from a music background, I always think of quarterback as a performance medium. And it's funny, but a guy, you know, you would look at a guy like Brandon Weeden, and I think of him as one of those guys that like is just technically sound, who just understands theory, who really could get up in front of a classroom and give a clinic on his position and his craft. But then, you know, when you get out there, yeah, it's funny because there's a guy like, I'll give you a perfect example, a guy like Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott, I remember, you know, watching his tape, and there were little things, there were lots of little things that I just either didn't like or wasn't sure of or skeptical about with him. And it, you know, if I lean the other direction with him just enough and gave him the benefit of the doubt on probably about five or six different things, I think I would have had a much higher evaluation on him. But he, and if I were going to maintain that music analogy, he's kind of like that player who, you know, what he plays is fairly simple. It's, you know, it's not unbelievably complex, but it sounds good. And when you put a good band around him, he's going to sound great. And it doesn't mean that he's a virtuoso at his craft, but he plays in the moment very well a lot of the time. And that if you give him the support he needs, he can be really, really good. And so there's a range of players where sometimes there's so many details, we can find ourselves looking for perfection with players or expecting a certain standard that can wind up being higher than it needs to be for that player to actually be effective. And like you said, for quarterback, it's so difficult because, you know, if he wound up with another team, would he have had a successful career? Would he have been off to a successful start to be able to develop in the manner that he has? And, you know, and then I laugh because we look from one week to the next, and depending on whether the Cowboys won or not, you know, he's either a god or he's like a, you know, he's a goat in a bad way. So it's just, yeah, it's something else.
And I think also for him, I think, and for a lot of the quarterbacks, whether it's Mahomes or any of these guys, I think adjusting sort of that your mindset of when I started following football 25 years ago, it was pocket pass, and it was drop back, go through your progressions, throw it. There was never really any improvisational stuff. And trying to incorporate where is the value for improvisation, athleticism, to make plays on the move, how do you value that in terms of versus sort of the guys that never get off script and just do what they're told? And it's a really, I think it's a quandary that anybody that started evaluating when I did or when you did, it's not as easy as someone who may jump in now in 2017 and all they've seen are some of these athletic quarterbacks coming out of college, because they're not having to transition their whole thought process for evaluation. Becomes different. And for me, it's been a learning process. I think I've gotten much better at it. But I think anybody who tells you that evaluating quarterbacks is the same as it was 15 years ago is completely crazy, because yeah, it's a whole different world now.
Yeah, it surely is. And I bet that, you know, I would bet that one day anyone who's listening to this, who's interested in going down this road, that it may seem easy now, but there will be something that changes in the next 10 to 15 years that you'll have to start noticing and thinking about, well, am I crazy to be open to this idea? Because everyone's kind of panning it. No one's really done it, or it hasn't been extremely successful yet, but I can, you know, be open to these ideas. And I think there is a balance to when you're writing a scouting report that you, like you said, you have to be courageous and make a stand about what you ultimately think about this player. But I also think that if you can, you know, it depends on the format. You know, I'm doing media format scouting. So for me, you know, and I run my own shop. So my own shop is, look, if you don't want to read what I have to say, here's the quick summary. If you want to see the detail, then I can give you loads of detail that will say, listen, I don't like this player, but I understand that if he's placed here, here, or here, and the team is open in these situations, I can give you all these qualify my statements about that, because I can give you a more nuanced approach. If I were in a room with, you know, with an NFL general manager or a head of scouting, you know, I know that I would not be able to do that unless asked to do that to a certain extent, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's definitely a different sort of feel, because sometimes they don't even, they want you to read your stuff and be done with it. And then, because there's so many levels, so many people that look at every player, that you're so layered and you have so little impact as one scout. Whereas what you're doing or what I'm doing, where it's in the media, there's nobody else telling me what grades I got to give a player,
right,
or setting the board. So I can sort of set it and stand with my guy, and I don't have to worry about the outside sources or bosses telling me where to rank them.
Right, right. And that's the fun thing. It's just like, you know, there's challenges to owning your own business, and there's challenges to working in I would call the corporate world, you know, and the NFL kind of has you're going to have that hierarchy type of structure in a sense. So, you know, you own your own shop. That's great. You get a little more freedom, but also you deal with the consequences a little faster as well, too.
No question.
So it's, you know, there's positives in both ways, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know that we're going to go on and talk a little bit more about so many things. So as much as I'm tempted to ask you about additional topics in scouting, I think we'll save that as we continue to go forward every other week. It would be fun just to talk about some players and talk about guys that have caught our eyes thus far. And, you know, I'd love for you to lead off with one, and then I'll share one as well. And I'll laugh and see if, you know, at some point we may hit the lottery and see if we both actually like the same player at the same time. But who's your first guy?
You know, this is a guy from Ohio State, that Austin Mack, a receiver, who I started grading last year when he was a junior, and was really liking this kid. And then he gets hurt. Season-ending injury, out for the year. And this year, although he's come back and they have Justin Fields there now, a quarterback, he has not had the production he had before. But this is a kid that I really believe that, although right now he's not being viewed as a high-end guy, and probably even as a late-round consideration, I think when the season gets to its conclusion and the All-Star game circuit and the combine and the pro days come up, I think this is a kid that people are going to start to see, and I'm sure scouts are already seeing it because they're there at the school, this is a big athletic receiver, and he's not going to be a guy that ever runs in the 4.4s and blows people away with being one of those rare giants who can outrun the small receivers. But he's a big, thick-bodied kid who I think is quicker than fast, runs very strong routes, and when he's doing things right, there's a lot of special to this kid. I'm not saying he's a first-round guy or anything like that that's going to be a slam-dunk starter, but there's something about this kid that I think is sort of being overlooked, with everybody talking about all the receivers around the country, and it's the deepest class in many years. This is a kid that I think is going to end up in that number 5 to number 10 receiver in the class. There's something about this kid that really makes me believe he has starting talent in the NFL. A little bit of a Keenan Allen to this kid in terms of not a blazer, but he does many of the things correctly. I will point out the one thing that does frustrate me is, I'd say once or twice a game, you can see that he's already decided he's ready to run with the ball, and then it goes barreling off his chest at 200 miles an hour and goes right to the ground because he just decides he's going to body catch the ball, which is a disaster. And I'll go on a quick sidetrack, Matt. For those people who are listening and may not have heard you or I discuss it in the past, the big reason that NFL teams hate body catchers is not that you can't catch the same percentage of balls and be in the 95 or 97% catching the ball when you're body catching. It's that once you get to the NFL, you have to go against real defensive backs. Most receivers in college, the bulk of defensive backs they go against are guys who are going to be working at Goldman Sachs or McDonald's in a year or two. In the NFL, when you body catch, if a receiver identifies that on film or is told that by the scouting department, they will no longer even try to break up the pass by putting an arm in front of you. All they're going to do is try to hit you in the back right as the ball arrives, because it's a guaranteed drop. And that's one of the biggest reasons that NFL teams are very hesitant with body catchers, is because it's a hard habit to untrain once you're a pro, and it's very easy to break up passes if a guy is a lifelong body catcher.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that concerns me with Austin Mack. But overall, there's something to this kid with his size, his athleticism, and his ability to make contested catches that has me somewhat excited that if I'm a team in the mid-rounds that wants to take a gamble on a kid with a lot of talent, I think this is a guy that could really develop once he gets in the NFL.
Do you see him playing the slot or flanker or the X? Where do you see him at?
You know, I would probably say more X right now, but I will say that as NFL teams are starting to use more and more bigger guys inside, especially a guy like Keenan Allen, like San Diego tends to do a lot, I could see Mac filling that role. But at the same time, like I talk about, if you're going to be inconsistent catching the ball, inconsistent at catching it on the inside of the field is a much greater risk than on the outside. Because on the inside, that ball may come up and be open to being intercepted. When you're way outside, if it hits your chest and it drops, there's only one other guy generally around you. So the odds of bad things happening are much lower. But I like this kid. I think he's got the versatility to play both. I don't think he's a dynamic, explosive guy. So I don't think he's going to be a big play guy from any alignment you put him in. But I do think he has many of the skills to be able to move inside and outside.
I like it. I like it. I can't wait to watch him. And it's funny that you talk about the catch point because, you know, a guy who still kind of bugs me right now in the NFL who has issues catching the ball. And he's not as much a body catcher, but he's a guy who doesn't use the right technique and he claps onto the ball is Courtland Sutton, who's having an excellent statistical season for the Broncos. But you watch him and he's a roller coaster right now in terms of like he'll make one play and, you know, he gets his hands on the ball and secures it. And he might just run through you and go for 80 yards, but he'll also have passes where, you know, the ball's right at his chest and he tries to clap onto it and the ball bounces right off his chin as someone's hitting him. And so I like how you mentioned for outside players, that's not as a big deal as it is inside because of the threat of a potential turnover with more players around him. So it's interesting to see how that development's going to go with Sutton. And I can't wait to look at Mac. I have a wide receiver too, that I also like out of this who's at a smaller school. It's Antonio Gandy-Golden out of Liberty. And he's about 6'4", 220. And, you know, in style, not necessarily in talent, but in style, it's kind of that AJ Green, Preston Williams type of athlete where he's long limbed and strong. And he does a really good job of high pointing and snatching the ball over his head. I think he does a very good job after contact or facing contact. So he's a physical player at the catch point, which I like. You know, watching him against Idaho State last year, I think he had like 13 targets and 10 receptions, and six of those catches came with contact happening, you know.
Wow.
And so I was,
that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he had one drop and, you know, looking at the drops, like he had the one drop he had, and let me see where I have it tracked. It was a pinpoint pass that was dropped, but it wasn't one that had to do with contact. So it was basically him just having a focus drop. And so I can live with that when you consider that he had like three passes that were caught after contact that weren't even like pinpoint passes. So he showed range. He showed ability to play that. He transitions well. I like how he blocks. He gets his hands into the chest of defenders pretty well. And I just, you know, for me, I want to see how he does at an all-star game. Like I hope he can get to an all-star game and just see how he handles top athletes there and how he can work in terms of getting off press coverage, and being able to see if he handles defenders just as confidently at the catch point as he's shown thus far at Liberty with the schedule that he has. And it, you know, looking at him overall, I mean, he pops off the page for me. And the only danger that I can, the only concern that I have is, again, it's because he's at Liberty as opposed to at Ohio State or somewhere like that. But I think that it's going to translate rather well if he gets an opportunity to get into an all-star game situation. And I think he will, especially with a guy like Jim Nagy, who it seems like he's focusing on the small school guys a lot.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, you bring up a great point with a small school guy going to those all-star games. I mean, that's a great barometer because it's not just about skill level. It's also about, hey, they've been a big fish in a tiny little pond. How does their mentality handle, hey, now I'm just another guy. I'm not getting special attention. I'm not the big man on campus. How do I do when I show up in Mobile and I'm just a number? No one really cares. They just want to hear me, and the coach is going to jump down my throat if I make a mistake, as opposed to maybe not doing that at school where you're the king. So, yeah, especially receivers. where a lot of time they're playing somewhat more basic offenses in college at the lower level. They come up, they have a lot more checks, a lot more coverages they're going to face. Those all-star games can not only make or break a guy, but it can really show in terms of when you're watching the practice, and you've seen this in Mobile too, certain guys, they handle the coaching, they get better each day. Other guys, you can see the coaches get on them, and from day to day, whether from a small school or big school, their performance goes down because they're not used to a new coach who doesn't treat them the same way as they're used to. And I think those all-star games for guys like that from a Liberty or from an Evangel University in Missouri, one of those smaller schools, it really gives you an opportunity to get a feel for not only the player's talent level, but what makes them tick. And it really gives you an idea, is this going to be a kid that's going to be able to handle all the things outside of the football field that are necessary to succeed at the NFL level?
Yeah, that's so true. And, you know, going back to the music analogy, I laugh because, you know, it is about confidence level in those environments. I mean, I was an all-state musician for a number of years in high school, and then I went to a university whose program and what I studied was probably the only thing better than its football team at the University of Miami in the late 1980s. And, you know, I remember my first day auditioning, and I remember hearing someone playing behind a door, and I was waiting for an audition, and I literally thought it was the professor, and I realized it was a fellow freshman just like me. And when I heard that freshman play and thought he was a professor, and he came out the door, and I was thinking, wow, I'm like, you know, I'm in a different world right here. And it's, and if you, you know, no matter how well people perform before those type of moments, when you get tested like that, and everyone does, when you think of, you know, there's great musicians who have unbelievable stage fright, Grammy Award winning musicians who have unbelievable stage fright and have issues with confidence, and they have to work through that. And some players do that, some players don't. And so, you know, I think of a, you know, a wide receiver in that example who I remember at the Senior Bowl who came from a smaller school to an extent, and he, his ability to work through press in drills was so good. It was the best I had seen there. And he just, he had a different technique every time he faced a good group of cornerbacks in that class. And he did not, I don't think he got beaten. I don't think he got stopped. And that was Eastern Washington's Cooper Kupp. I mean, he was so unbelievable in those drills to me. I was pretty confident that combined with his tape, combined with the combine that he had, when you start layering these things together, you start looking and going, yeah, he's not going to have a problem. If they put him in the slot, he's going to be just fine in the NFL. And I think that that confidence level is part of it too, because you need to have that mental toughness. And if you can't, if you're great where you were, and then you end up in the, you know, and but you can't even get through the best college players, what are you going to do when all of these college players are now dealing with what it's really like in the pros? So even the Senior Bowl is a jump, but then you have a bigger jump from the Senior Bowl to the NFL. So yeah, the what they do there is just a really good first step to look at. So who's your next player who you're looking at that's caught your eye?
You know, it's probably not one that you've looked at, because I know you're the skill position man, but when the season started, I wanted to look at Iowa because they have these two offensive tackles, Alaric Jackson and Tristan Wilfs, who are their starting tackles. And Jackson missed a bunch of games because he was hurt and just came back in the lineup versus Michigan. So I've been watching this Tristan Wirfs kid, and he played right tackle last year. This year he started the season at left once Jackson got hurt midway through the first game. And it's funny, Jackson gets all the hype, but the more I watch Wirfs, the more I think this is a guy who not only is going to start in the NFL – very productive, but this to me is a classic. He could be a Pro Bowl type guy at five different offensive line positions, and because of that, because of his background at Iowa, which means Kirk Ferentz has been sort of the guy mentoring him, Chris Doyle's been handling him in the strength room, this is a kid who's going to go very high in the draft. I think this kid's going to go in the top 10 or 12 picks in the draft. He is a really good football player. He's fundamentally sound. And when I look at an offensive lineman, I want to see, can you bend your knees, and how thick and strong is your lower body? And this kid can sit down in a chair when he plays, and he's got these big lower haunches. You would think he's 350 pounds when you look at just his lower haunches, and he's only about 310, but he's just got these great lower body, great hand use, and he knows how to play with leverage. I just think this kid's future is so bright. I would love to see him get an opportunity to play left tackle at the NFL level, because I think he can do that and do it at a real high level. I love this kid. He jumped off the film at me when I started watching Iowa.
Wow. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was doing the show with Ross Tucker today earlier, and he mentioned those tackles at Iowa when we were talking about AJ Epenesa, the defensive end. And so he brought up those two tackles and liked Wirtz a lot. So that's fascinating. You know,
on a side note, I'm just going to tell you, you may or may not know this, back 100 years ago, when the XFL first started, the first year they ever had, the one year they existed, I worked for them, and I scouted the East Coast, and I went to Princeton when Ross was one of three senior offensive linemen. And I remember grading him when he was coming out, meeting all of them, and I think one of them played in the league for a few years other than Ross, but Ross was really the one that stuck around and had a career in the NFL. But to this day, I always remember going there and grading Ross when he was actually in college.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. Now we got to ask about the scouting report on Ross Tucker.
I got to try to find it.
Man, well, I'm going to surprise you a little bit, because doing Ross's show, I've been looking at the guys other than the skill players a little bit this year, a little bit more. And one guy that probably out of every player that I've watched that's just stuck out to me and is Grant Delpit, the safety at LSU. I have a total man crush on this player. I love his sideline to sideline range as a center fielder, but he's also a guy that he can go up that alley north south and really just be disruptive. And I think he's someone that also can really play tight to the line and drop fast enough to break up passes that are attempted over his head. But he's also someone that can play deep and climb up the alley or the seam and disrupt with a hit or a wrap. He's a smooth at back pedals and transitions. I think he plays through the ball at the catch point really well. And he can either knock the ball loose without hitting the defender, or he can wrap and put a helmet on the ball. So it's just not one way or the other with him. The range of what he can do, you know, in terms of being physical and being at the right position is very strong. And they use him as a pass rusher. So I like seeing how he can work under and around contact. So there's potential for him off the edge when they need to use him in that way. He has that stop-start quickness you're looking for, the change of direction to continue pursuing against edge blockers. I think he wraps up well as a tackler. He's not just a hitter. He's just not just an elite athlete who gets in the position and can disrupt a lesser guy. He's going to wrap you and bring you down. And I think his on-field, what really stands out to me is that intuitive on-field intelligence, problem-solving ability. Like, he knows what he does to integrate with his body and mind on the field is just something else. I've just seen so many plays where, you know, he plays the ball all the way to the ground. He's good at being able to, you know, he'll be in a situation where he looks like he's making a play and the opponent's foiled him, and he'll adjust his body in a way that might not be technically sound, but he was already in a bad situation. So he figures out a way to turn a bad situation into a good one, with just creative awareness of understanding where his body is and how to foil that defender. Like, there was this fake field goal against Georgia where basically the kicker stiff arms him, which you don't normally would see, but the kicker stiff armed him, and he figured out a way to like spin his back to the kicker and then stick his arm out. And he couldn't even see where he was, but you could tell he had a feel for which arm to stick out and put his arm into the body. And he literally reached the ball, but it was like the back of his hand, the back of his arm, because his back was already to the kicker at this point while falling. And he stuck it in there and slowed the kicker down because he had disrupted the ball security of the kicker until help arrived. And it was just a play like that, that when you see him, you know, do that kind of work, or when I watch him as a blitzer, he took on a guy like Scottie Phillips at Ole Miss, who I think is one of the better pass protection specialists at running back that I've seen thus far. And to watch him where it looks like he's done because maybe he comes off the edge and around and he gets knocked away from the quarterback. As soon as he's one of those guys that if he hits the ground, he just bounces right back up. He has a feel for, he's like a cat, you know. It's like you joke about how you could see a cat fall and it lands on its feet. He's yep. like a cat that way. He literally, he can fall down and next thing you know, he's on all fours and up and accelerating towards the ball carrier. And he does that over and over again. And he reminds me a little bit in style and somewhat in talent too, of a great player like Charles Woodson. I just think that he has that talent and I would not be surprised at the end of the year. I say, this is the best player I've watched this year. I'm just absolutely in love with what I've seen of him.
I am 100% with you because I can tell you as a person who's, I try to go methodically school by school through the Big Ten to start my season. Then I go on to the SEC and whatever. Week two, just flipped on a game on a Saturday. They're playing Texas. And after that game was over, I said, all right, Monday morning, I'm grading this one player. Because he jumped out in that Texas game. And I've talked about him on a few different podcasts this year. This, to me, is the generational type safety. The guy you want now, because he's not your traditional guy who's going to sit back deep and just be in coverage. Or your big hammer type who's just going to come up and play the run and get exposed deep. He pretty much can be lined up anywhere you want him to. You can put it, I really believe you could probably put him over a lot of slot receivers. I mean, some are going to take advantages because he is a safety and he doesn't have those traditional corner skills.
Right.
He's going to be able to handle a lot of slot receivers, especially the bigger ones. He's going to have no problem in any type of deep alignment coverage because he reads the play. He's athletic. He can change directions. And when I put him in the box, there's something about whether he's in the box or just near the box. He is around the ball. He is willing to sacrifice his body. This kid plays the game the way I want a player to play it. I mean, there's nothing, in my opinion, not to like about this kid. I cannot foresee this kid not being not only a really high draft pick, but a really good player early in his career. He just jumps out at me as a guy to get really excited about at the next level. And you mentioned one thing there about like when he got knocked to the ground and how quickly he got up. One of the first things I got taught when I started working for the Rams was the old school guys, the guys that were in their 60s and 70s, and they were around when they were figuring out the ball was stuffed or pumped. They would always say that the quickest way to tell a good athlete is watching when they get their feet chopped out, how quick are they back on their feet. They say the great athletes, it's literally like they don't even stop. It's just they hit and they're up. Whereas the guys that aren't that athletic, they got to put a hand down and they got to get their balance. And when you watch Delpit, you see there's times he's going so fast that he doesn't even – sometimes he's focused on the ball and a guy will chop him. He literally gets boom and he's back up and almost not back in pursuit at the same speed instantly, but he's back in pursuit instantly and up to full speed in a few strides. I mean, this kid is going to be a fun player to watch for the next decade. I think a team with a really creative defensive coordinator who likes to move guys around – he could really make this guy almost the centerpiece, sort of like San Diego did, and I'm forgetting the kid's name for whatever reason, the safety they took last year in the first round.
Oh, Derwin James.
Derwin James. This kid could be like Derwin, maybe even a little better in his deep coverage, but a similar type guy that you can move him all over on defense, and he really becomes almost like having 12 guys out there because the offense will not know where he's going to line up snap to snap, and it gives you such an advantage defensively to become more unpredictable to the offense.
Yeah, he just makes it look easy. I think I joked on a podcast recently. I said, listen, you can have everybody this year. I just want him. Just give me, this player. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, and it's one of those things that, I mean, I certainly, you know, we can talk about draft stock and all those things all you want, but I mean, when it comes down to someone says, who's the most talented player you've seen? And it's just like, just watching him was a joy because of exactly what you mentioned in terms of it does look easy. He's disruptive. He's versatile. And then just that ability. I love hearing that tidbit about being able to get up fast. And because it looks like, I mean, it literally looks like it was all part of the plan as opposed to like it was disrupted and you have to watch it over again and go, oh yeah, he did get knocked down there. I think he was on the ground for a second. I don't know.
For a split second. Exactly. You and I would be down there for an hour trying to get up and this guy's up before they can even say he's down.
Exactly. You know, and that's just, you know, that's fantastic about this. And this show was absolutely a joy. And I hope that, you know, the people who are listening to this, please give us feedback on what you thought, because we're going to be doing this every other week. We're going to be talking about aspects of scouting. We're going to talk about aspects of the NFL draft from our point of view and what we do with our processes. And then also just be talking about players all, you know, throughout the year, all the way through the draft and beyond, hopefully. And, you know, this was absolutely one of the most fun podcasts that I've done in a while, Russ.
That's awesome. I'm loving it. I mean, a lot of the people that I do podcasts with are more sort of on the, they don't know the players. So they're just sort of asking about players and it becomes a one-dimensional conversation. I love the fact that you and I can go back and forth and discuss the littlest idiosyncrasies that we see on film. I think it makes not only for great discussion, but I think it helps us both learn. Yeah. Because when you talk about a player, it makes me think, you know, I haven't really thought about that, or I didn't think about that specific skill. And that's one of the things I love, is it's podcasts are great for other people to listen to, but I always take them as, hey, is this one that I can learn from? Is this a way I can get better at doing my thing? And I've just noticed over the years reading your stuff, I've gotten better at what I'm doing. So to be able to do this together, I'm so excited. And I hope the people that listen to it really understand the passion that we both have for the evaluation of players. It's not, like you said, it's not where they get drafted. It's 5 years from now, are they good players? Are they the players we thought that they'd be in the NFL, be it players or guys that are on the street that we didn't think were good enough? And that to me is the beauty of this. I'm so excited by this and by what's coming in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So Russ, where can people follow you and get in touch with you to learn more about your work?
The best thing they can do is they can go to @RussLandy, which is L-A-N-D-E. It's follow me on Twitter or Instagram on that. And that's the website too, is RussLandy.com. And we're going to be putting out a draft guide this year with hopefully about 450 to 500 reports.
Awesome.
Where we break them down using the NFL grading scale, which is different than anything anybody out there uses.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, this is going to be awesome. And it's going to be funny because I've had some feedback from people about the RSP cast. They've liked the analytics podcast with Dwayne McFarlane and Jay Moyer and, you know, the analytics and film podcast that they're doing and what Mark Schofield and I are doing with the Quick Game. But I've gotten some requests this week and last week about, you know, I'd really love to hear more about the college players throughout the year. You know, I was anticipating more for that to happen. And I was kind of smiling and thinking, yeah, well, Russ and I were going to get started on that pretty soon. So I hope for those of you who've asked me that question, you've gotten your answer and you're emphatically happy about it now. So you can follow, you know, you can follow my work at Matt Waldman on Twitter. MattWaldmanRSP.com is the site, and YouTube, the RSP Film Room. And you can subscribe to this podcast at a variety of outlets, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and I believe Blueberry and Podbean. So thanks again for listening, everyone, and we will see you next week.